It is required of every man.
Gets returned.
But the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world, with me, and witness what he cannot share, but might have shared on earth and turned to happiness.
Again the spectre raised a cry and shook its chain and wrung its shadowy hands. Hello and welcome to a Christmassy Nerds Assemble Extra number 3 with myself, Emily King, Ghost of Christmas Past, and...
I'm Matthew Hurd, the Ghost of Christmas Present.
And I'm Paul, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come.
Ah, lovely. In case you hadn't already guessed... We're going to be discussing Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, and specifically cinematic adaptations of the short story, in particular Scrooged, the Bill Murray one, The Muppets Christmas Carol, which obviously we don't need to explain what that is, hopefully.
Yeah, who's in that one?
I'm not sure.
Michael Caine.
And A Christmas Carol, which is, in this particular case, the Zemeckis film that came out in 2009?
Nine, I think.
Yeah. So.
With Jim Carrey, we should probably say.
Yeah, with Jim Carrey. Yeah, that makes extra sense. I suppose one thing when talking about Dickens' tale is that there's the ghosts. In theory, you got four main ghosts.
Yeah.
And actually, there's more than four ghosts in the original tale, and Zemeckis picks up on this.
Yes.
So as well as Marley, who's very dead.
Yes.
At this point.
Damned to walk the earth.
And I hope you're all fine with spoilers, because, I mean, this short story's... well, over 100 years old.
That's not really a spoiler. The first line of the book is Marley was dead.
Yeah, or had been dead for like these past 7 years. Yeah.
God damn it, Dickens.
In fact, he spoils it even more because it's Marley was dead to begin with.
He actually drops so many hints as to what's happening beforehand, it gets a bit ridiculous in the actual short story. But anyway, so we've got our ghosts. So we've got Marley, we've got the Ghost of Christmas Past, we've got the Ghost of Christmas Present, and then we've got the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come.
Hello.
And then actually,
you can't talk,
and
then
actually, in the original short story and in the Zemeckis version, we do see or experience the other ghosts that have been put into the position that Marley has been in death.
It's the only version I've actually seen that's done that, that I can think of, like a cinematic version, I mean.
Mm. Yeah, but it's something that tends to be overlooked. But I think it actually makes the idea that there are ghosts around perhaps just that a little bit more plausible, because it's actually a widespread issue. And it also kind of shows that Scrooge isn't alone in being an absolute utter miser.
Miser?
Yeah. What I'm going to go for.
But yeah, you're going with miser.
I'm going with miser. What would you go with?
Misery?
He's an absolute Scrooge. No way.
Oh. Do you know what's funny? Reading the short story, just to give background to this, because I really wanted to know how much things defend. Well, obviously with Scrooged, it was obvious that beyond having some ghosts and a dude who was rich, there was a lot of, you know, there was going to be a lot of difference. But like how much The Muppet's Tale and the Zemeckis film actually deferred from the source text.
I was surprised, actually, how much those two sort of matched up. Mm-hmm. A lot of the dialogue is obviously taken directly from the story, because you could tell it was identical in both versions. And I almost didn't expect them to be that faithful, actually.
There's a lot of dialogue that they did change, though. And I was perhaps... particularly, it wasn't even the dialogue that concerned me most, it was the interpretation of the ghosts. Hmm. Like, everyone gets the Ghost of Christmas Present quite reasonably right. It says in the book.
Large beardy guy with cornucopia.
And he's actually described as a giant in the actual book. fine.
Well, Scrooge obviously went completely different.
Yeah, that's
tangent on that.
Yeah,
she's more of a like fairy.
Yeah, that was a good, yeah. She was. She made up. For
she was not a large.
She made up for her tiny presence with all her physical violence.
I think.
And
she,
who doesn't
I think
like
she,
violence on Christmas?
I think she was compensating for not being a giant. That was a Napoleon syndrome.
To be honest, all the ghosts in Scrooge though are quite different. Apart from the, nobody seems to be able to change the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. He's like.
Well, he's the Grim
Reaper. He's a ringmaster.
Yeah. And actually, having all those little monsters under its cloak, I think, those rotten things.
I'm sure I've seen that before somewhere.
Yeah, that is in the short story. There are
things
under the cloak. Ugh. But it's not under his cloak. It's under the. It's just as the ghost of Christmas present is dying. He reveals.
That's in the Zemeckis version.
Yeah,
that's
in it. Yeah, and the whole description of it, the wanton ignorance. That was in the original.
That's another two spirits to add to our spirit count,
technically,
by the way.
In Scrooge, Marley Scrooge actually kind of looks in, you know, kind of, oh, this is great costumes, like, the spirit's inside. So it kind of has a similar thing.
But the thing is that ghost, though, overall, is very physical in both. The in Scrooge and the Muppets Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Whereas in A Christmas Carol and the short story, obviously, it is a thing of shadow.
Yeah.
It is part of the shadows. So that's a really big. He's not a physical thing in a cloak. It's a shadow that lurks just beside Scrooge and kind of points, you know, horribly at things and just spends a lot of time being very scary.
It's dark Scrooge.
That's interesting, because in like almost every version I think I've seen, he's a cloaked, faceless thing.
He is described as a cloaked, faceless thing, but he's more shadow. Yeah, he's more shadow than
like
the ghost.
Who did that first then, so for the others to have picked up on that? And
probably one of the most early films. If you think about it, they've been making versions of A Christmas Carol since the beginning of cinema. So there's a good chance that obviously they did maybe make it a more physical thing for the sake of dealing with the technology that they had at the time. But the one that's really weird for difference, at least its shape is consistent, and the overall kind of like Grim Reaper like
visage. Yeah, it doesn't speak. That's always
the same. What's really weird is the ghost of Christmas past. Weird child thing in the Christmas Carol. Obviously, Taxi Driver and Scrooge, that's fine. We can deal with that. That, you know, we know this is not a straight adaptation, that's fine. But the Zemeckis tale, it's basically a candle.
An Irish candle.
An Irish candle, yes. There. Now, you see, the thing is that actually both the Christmas Carol, the Muppets Christmas Carol and A Christmas Carol are wrong. Because actually, the ghost of Christmas past in the original story is a mixture of the two.
Damn these newfangled reboots.
I know. It's like, so it's actually, it's described in the book as being like, it has like, it's like, you can't quite tell if it's a child or a man's face. It's kind of in between ages. It could be either sort of thing. And it's got all these very simple robes and stuff on, but then it seems to have a bit of a candle for a head. Whereas you get the kind of like the child face and just robes.
Yeah.
Kind of thing in the Christmas Muppets Christmas Carol. In the Zemeckis film, it's all candle. Which is just kind of like, okay.
It is very strange.
Very, very strange.
It also looks really strange. The candle one,
it didn't work
quite right.
I think they really should have just gone, they were working with CG. They could have just done what it said in the friggin' novel, well not novel, short story, and it would have been fun.
They were obviously closer with Yet to Come than most other versions, so it's weird.
Except for that whole horse chase
thing.
I don't know what, and him becoming incredibly shrunk down. I was like, what the hell's the point in it? It's just.
Oh, when the giant shrunk down?
No, not when the giant shrunk down. No. When Scrooge was
shrunk
down.
Oh, yeah, no, that bit was. We'll get to that later, though, won't we?
Yeah. But anyway, the ghost. Which film probably did the ghosts the best, getting the kind of like a balance that you weren't too distracted, but yet at the same time got the feeling of what they were meant to represent.
Well, in Scrooge, they really fit what else was going on. As weird as they were, and as much as they don't match the story in any way, they fit really well.
A rude cab driver just makes so much sense for Ghosts of Christmas Past. I can't imagine why, but, you know, maybe it's people reminiscing about long cab journeys away from the airport or something to get back to family. Like, that's what I can imagine happening with somebody writing in that part of the world.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's the whole issue of whether or not you've got, like, looks almost like a kid with flowy robes, candle. I think I'd take the kid with flowy robes as my preferred Ghost of Christmas Past, because the cat, it just doesn't work. It's just like, you get to do the whole thing that happens in the book, because he does cap the light out.
Yes.
That does happen in the short story, and that happens in the Zemeckis film, and though not to the same effect in the short story. And the Ghost of Christmas Present, like, other than the fairy, so they're both the same.
I've always loved the Muppet. The Muppet of Christmas Present, I think he's great. The giant head.
I remember, which is ironic. Was he forgetful in all the versions? Because he wasn't really forgetful at all in the short story.
He wasn't forgetful in the Zemeckis version either. I think that was the
Muppets. It was just the Muppets.
I liked it, though. I liked the idea that he was only really existing in the present and didn't have much memory, because
He's almost literally short-term memory.
Yeah. The Ghost of Christmas Past does all the remembering.
Lots of remembering. Mm. Great deal of remembering. But then, of course, like you were saying, but the Ghost of Christmas yet to come. I think I prefer it when he's not a shadow.
Yeah.
I know he's a shadow, and I prefer him, it makes more sense with the sort of more corporeal theme. There's just like, yes, that's something dark and sinister with, you know, having it's something made of shadow. At the same time, though, you might as well have just had the Ghost of Christmas Past as like a literal torch or a gas lamp, considering the time when it's set. You know, gas lamps then? Anyone for gas lamps?
Candles are more set in the past, though, so maybe that was what they were going for.
Yeah, but it's even described in the story that there's gas, and you've got people going along lighting the street lamps.
Yeah.
Things
Gonzo
like that.
And Rizzo lighting the street lamps.
You want to say the line?
Which line?
Light the lamp, not the rat!
Ah, sorry.
Light the lamp, not the rat! Okay, I think, I really liked the humour of the Muppets.
I think the Christmas Carol is quite sombre as it is, so I think the
Muppets one was able to bring some much needed balance.
Yeah. Speaking of how sad it is, particularly the Muppets version, did the version you watched have Belle's song? Is it Belle's song in it? No. Ours didn't either, because you watched on Netflix?
Yeah, we did.
We saw the DVD version. I looked this up afterwards, because I know she's meant to sing a song when they split up. And they sort of sing the same song again at the end, but the happy version, because he's now sorted himself out. But it was completely gone from the version we watched, and I didn't know why. Apparently that only existed on the video. It wasn't even in the cinematic cut, but I've seen the video a lot of times.
When you were much, much younger.
Yeah, probably not that much younger, but it's like that's the single saddest moment of the film, and they took it out for pacing or something.
I want to go back to Belle in a bit, because I've got some interesting insights on that of my own. But let's bring that in now, because I wanted to talk about the closeness to the source text, and that is one of the issues, the representation of Belle. Now, in all three films, Belle's in there early on. Yeah? She's there from, you know, time of the Ghost of Christmas Past. And thing is, she's not there in the source text.
She's not there at all.
No. Well, she's not there at the point that they put her in, which is the equivalent of the Fizzwig
The Fizzywig
party.
Dance party, yeah.
Sorry. She's not there at Fizzywig's. She's inserted as a point later on as just, you know, some women that he's come to know, and they split up. That's what you get in the novel.
But you only get them splitting up, you don't see them meeting.
Yeah, you only get them splitting up. But instead, in the short story, she does get another appearance during The Ghost of Christmas Present.
Ooh.
She's actually shown what happened to her. And in the short story, she's married.
Yeah.
A nice gentleman. She seems to be very well off. And has had a lot of children. A lot of children. Has quite
Somebody's been busy. There's quite
a rambunctious household who were all eagerly awaiting presents at the point that the story chances upon them. And so you actually find out what really happened to her, which I think is kind of sad when you think it's like, oh, they split up.
Yeah.
And it's like, and Scrooge isn't made to see the life he could have had with her in the films. That's the stupid thing. It's like, so you're trying to make him regret his life decisions, and you see, and he sees the cause and effect for everything else.
But he only sees the cause for that.
Yeah. But in, obviously in the short story, you get the full cause and effect sort of.
That is really strange.
Yeah.
Of course, you see her in the present in Scrooged.
Mm.
Mm.
Because but she's not married.
Well, no, and they get back together.
Oh, she's actually not.
Hollywood happy endings. But then, God.
But then, oh God, Bill Murray's. Did anyone else notice the makeup that Bill Murray wears when he's set in the film's present?
No.
There's like some weird thing going on with the top half of his face to make him look a bit older, because when they do the scenes where it's from the past, which is his actual, at the time the film was made, his actual age, he doesn't have this weird thing going on with the top half of his head.
I absolutely didn't notice that.
Yeah.
That's called a mullet,
No, it wasn't a mullet. It was literally like there was a makeup effect going on between sort of under his eyes. There was like this kind of, like they'd done something to just make him look a bit older when he was in the present, and obviously we didn't see him in the future, but yeah, in the present.
In the future, he's in a box.
That's another thing. Like in the Muppet Christmas Carol, you see the grave.
Yeah.
You see everything being sold off. But in the Zemeckis film and Scrooge, you do see the body.
Yes.
And this is despite the fact that actually the Zemeckis film and the Muppets Christmas Carol roughly aiming for around the same age audience, which is strange, and both Disney, aren't they?
I think so, yeah. Well, Disney's also got Mickey's Christmas Carol, so they've got at least three versions under their belt.
So Scrooged is the odd one out, in essence, because it's made by different companies. Like.
Yeah, and also set in what was the present day.
Yeah,
a bit more adult, too.
Yeah. Mm. I do love the ghost of I do like Marley's interpretation.
What, in Scrooged?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like TV exec that's just this mongering.
I love the golf ball.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting, kind of the settings between them, because obviously in the Zemeckis one, he's obviously kind of a moneylender. Mm. But as a TV exec in Scrooged, and I think that actually works quite well.
Yeah.
He's a moneylender
in
the original source, and obviously he's in the Muppet Christmas Carol as well.
But it's always he's in a job that is almost like deemed to be kind of soulless.
Mm.
Yeah. It's changed slightly, because when he's a moneylender, it's about generosity and how he's super duper cheap and won't give anyone anything.
Mm.
In Scrooge, it's more that he's just a jerk.
Yeah.
Mm. It's not necessarily that he's
a bit of a yuppie jerk.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not really greedy and doesn't give things.
Yeah.
But he's more just a bit nasty and awful as a person.
Mm. And that comes across in like the beginning when kind of looking at the trailers for just basically like, all these horrible scenes like Christmas is here, you shouldn't miss it. Your life may depend on it.
Go
That would be the Michael Bay version of A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
What you're saying is that Bill Murray is Michael Bay.
No, no.
Don't do that to Bill Murray. Jeez, man. Other things that I noticed with the sort of what it did with the source text, all of them. When he's been shown like Christmas present, he's shown a bit more than just London town in like the short story. He's taken to far afield to see how everyone else spends Christmas, from miners and their families to sailors out at sea.
So you're basically saying that there's a bit where the ghost of Christmas past
present.
Shows him the world.
No, ghost of Christmas present shows him the world. And
it is incredible to me that they wouldn't have included that in the Zemeckis version, considering how much flying around and nonsense they shoved in to show off the 3D.
And the thing is, though, is that obviously in the short story, the point was to show Scrooge, because he says repeatedly, you know, he's like with his nephew at, near the beginning when he comes into the office, and he's like, and Scrooge to him is like, why do you celebrate Christmas? What have you got to celebrate? Trying to hint at the fact that he's perhaps not as wealthy as he could be because of the amount of time he spends being, you know, a human being. And you'd think that you would keep in the bit with the ghost at least, you know, taking him around places to show what Christmas is like for everyone who isn't just, you know, who is in his social circles, to show that it is regardless of, you know, position in society. Obviously, if you're from a Christian background or whatever, you're celebrating Christmas, you know, and you eat regardless of wealth, you're going to be celebrating it in some small way. I mean, to be honest, I would say that in the original source text, especially the miners one, it's a bit condescending, considering how miners at the time were treated. It's just kind of like, yeah, I don't think they would be quite as happy, cheery as Dickens put out. And that's something I'll come back to again later. But none of the films, obviously Scrooge is pretty much left out of this, but neither of the two ones that are meant to be kind of more straight adaptations are not. They don't include everything. And they do change things.
How short is the short story?
You could probably read it in like a couple of hours or so.
Okay.
It's not fantastically long.
No.
I mean, it was written to be printed in a magazine.
Yeah.
And read in one go. It wasn't something to be serialized.
Well, I was asking because obviously
that'd be fantastic.
If there's more stuff in the story than there is in the films, then it must add up to longer than a film in total, in theory.
I mean, can you imagine if it was serialized? It'll be like, coming up next week, we have The Ghost of Christmas Present.
Yeah, well, it does come in three easy packages, doesn't it?
Well, in some ways, the Zemeckis one is closer, but then it does all these weird flourishes.
Yeah.
It's like you do that in place of actually just including more of the original source text. And one thing that...
Especially that round the world bit. Yeah. That is...
Well, I say around the world.
Around
the immediate empire, as in around the British Isles.
That does seem crazy to me, though, because they were doing so much of that kind of thing anyway.
And then the other thing that is weird is the whole... I mean, this is not the Scrooge situation, which is kind of weird having the dad as a merciless butcher.
I'm not your real...
But it was the whole... What he was doing when he was at the school... When he's encountered at the school, but with Ghost of Christmas Past, because like it seemed to be in the short story that the kid was like, was reading, but he wasn't reading like necessarily like a serious, studious text. I think he might have been reading something like a 1001
Nights,
basically, rather than anything else.
It's implied his dad's terrible. In the Zemeckis version, at least, and presumably in the book.
Yeah, and it's and his sister comes out to get him.
Yeah.
But in the book, it's made up that when she finally is it when she finally does it, I can't remember. Like it sounds like he was coming home for good.
Yeah.
When it finally happens, because there's two Christmases or two encounters there. Like it goes from one time when he's just alone there, and then another time when he's older and he's old enough to go and be apprenticed out in the city, which would probably would have been either it would have been straight to Fizzlewigs or somebody else. But I think we're going to move on to another important thing, which I think we need to ask ourselves, is the story still relevant today? And perhaps this is the point where it could all get a tiny bit political.
Oh dear.
I don't know, dear listeners, which parts of the world you're from, because according to our stats, you're all from very different parts of the world.
Hello world.
For instance, say our government voted by a majority to not accept help from the EU to subsidise food banks for the poor in this country, despite the fact that demand for food banks has increased by an alarming percent since the global recession started.
I think this begs the question, right?
Yeah.
David Cameron, yeah, as Scrooge, who would be the ghost of Christmas present, past, and future?
But for him, the ghost of Christmas past would be Thatcher, and that would be...
Yeah, I was thinking that, actually.
No, you've been too close to the... If you consider that, it's like... With
Can't we just send that fairy round to beat them?
The Tories as they are today are like more like the Whigs of the past. There's like that weird, yeah, switchover point. Like, it's the same with the Americans, apparently, with the Democrats and Republicans. There's like this weird switchover that kind of
where
happened.
The left becomes the right and the right becomes the left.
Yeah, that sort of... I mean, in a way, it's almost like North and South Pole switching every so many millennia. We've got a historical rate of poverty happening amongst the population at the moment in this country, in the UK. And an attack on the poor has certainly been happening in a lot of the rhetoric that's been used in the media and stuff. And actually, if you consider the kind of sentiments that Dickens is putting forward in the short story, and actually the overall sentiments in the films about treating those who are less well off better, it is still very relevant to the situations we've got today. Because, I mean, it's like we can go about poverty in whatever part of the world, but the fact of the matter is that the countries that keep trying to help poverty overall, they still haven't managed to really deal with poverty in their own countries. Yeah. It's just a continuing issue. And the fact that it's a continuing issue is kind of sad if you think about it, because Dickens is writing over 100 years ago. And so we haven't actually managed to deal with the problem.
Was Dickens writing about institutions, though, really? Was he talking about government and society treating its people that way? Or was he talking about individuals? Because it's a story about an individual.
I mean, he can't, you know, because he writes about stuff like workhouses and prisons in his other novels and short stories. But he was very aware of how bad being poor was at the time, during his lifetime. And there's a lot, he restrains himself a lot in his writing, in his actual representation of how bad things are. There's like this classic story, I can't remember which Dickens it is, it could be something like, is it Dombey and Son? Dombey and Son, yes. Thank you, Paul, for remembering my degree reading.
Not that I read it myself, but
I think it might be in Dombey and Son, or it's something else. But there's a bunch of graves described in one passage, and it's just a handful of family graves.
Yeah.
But actually, apparently, the graves that Dickens was basing on, it was almost like an entire line of infants from the same family who hadn't made it past like their first or second birthday or something horrific like that. But he scaled that back in the actual story. So what we have in Dickens' representation of the poor in A Christmas Carol is actually him still holding back from the true horrors. And of course, he was writing this for one of his regular magazines that he would have coming out. And it was obviously for the Christmas edition. Obviously, he couldn't make it too depressing.
No.
As he was meant to be entertaining people. But at the same time, the whole thing's a bit preachy. Like, he did want people to, you know, not just rely on the church, for instance,
yeah,
to help the poor.
There's very little mention of churches and religion, considering it's a Christmas story in Victorian England.
The church, men of the cloth, get mentioned perhaps just a bit more in the short story, but not by much, and it's perhaps not in the most positive of lights.
There's actually, thinking about it, there is that bit with the Ghost of Christmas Present, who implies that he is a god somehow, he talks about Men of the Cloth. I can't quite remember what he says. It's only in the Zemeckis version, and I've never seen that bit before.
Yeah, was that... So I know he talks about his other brothers and being like one of 1,870 odd or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, kind of describing how many years, you know, it's actually been going on type thing.
Which kind of makes sense. At the same time, though, doesn't deal perhaps with some of the suspected origins of the festival. But going back to, is the story still relevant today? I would say yes, because of the fact that we still have poverty the world over to extremely scary degrees. And the fact that there could be, that there will be people sleeping rough, especially in, say, the colder climes at this time of year, is obviously quite peril, filled with peril for those poor people. And yeah, unfortunately, it pains me to say that the story is still relevant today, more than 150 years, really.
170 years this
year.
Yeah,
so more so 170 years.
170 years last week.
It is depressing to think that a story that's 170 years old today that has representation of a social problem, an issue that the whole society was meant to have been dealing with, it still hasn't been solved, which is quite pathetic. Actually,
is the story, because the problem with Scrooge is his apathy and the fact he doesn't care. Was the story really focusing on that, though, or was it just trying to raise awareness? Because now the problem isn't necessarily apathy so much as people not knowing.
Oh, I don't know. You haven't seen some of the tweets I've seen some certain politicians lately about food banks.
Oh God.
Unfortunately, apathy is still an ignorance.
But again, still a real issue. That's government versus individuals, because we know that people have been giving a lot to things like Syria recently.
Yeah.
And the individuals are actually becoming more giving, I believe.
Yeah, and
more charitable.
It's the state. But then that's funny, because obviously, like, Scrooge is like, well, are there no prisons or
no
workhouses,
yeah,
you know, for people to go into still, you know, when he's asked to donate money, and which comes to bite him in the ass several times during the course of the story. Yeah, so it's definitely still relevant today. Okay, so I think next I'd like to talk about how Charles Dickens invented Christmas.
Invented Christmas.
At least that's what it feels like. Because a lot of the, like, the whole having, like, very white Christmas, having time off, having lots of family around, and everyone being very jovial and happy and stuff, and it being the right of all classes to have this. It's a very, Dickens was kind of one of the first people to really put this forward.
Is he a socialist?
Perhaps, without realising it. Perhaps. There's a chance. But, yeah, it was his intent, like, the height of what they could have, you know, for Christmas dinner wasn't a goose. It was a turkey.
Yeah.
In Dickens' tale. I don't know if, A, that is because at the time the things were rare. Well, actually, they were rare. Turkeys were rare at that time in Britain. Nobody was, like, mass farming them. Certainly not the degree today by certain sources of turkey in England. But also, goose was the traditional bird at Christmas in England. Traditional poultry to eat for Christmas. Have it all stuffed and everything. Very traditional.
Yeah.
Well, you say that. Nowadays, we stick them inside each other now, don't we? It's like duck inside goose inside chicken.
No, stuff like that existed before, though. It's just that would be for the incredibly rich.
Ah, right.
You know, it's
kind of beyond me. I don't understand this.
Have you seen those Chimera things where they chop animals up and sew them together so that you've got, like, sphinxes and things made of meat?
No, I don't.
That sounds horrific.
They did that. That was a thing they did.
No, they won't. No. Oh, something I forgot to say in the closest to the source text. No Christmas pudding.
None?
In the adaptations, in the original, there's Christmas pudding. apparently, because don't forget, all those adaptations we've looked at were American.
Yeah, I was going to say, would an American even know what that is?
American, and they couldn't obviously get their head around the idea of Christmas pudding.
It's an alcoholic cake.
Can you imagine if you mentioned mince pies? That would confuse everyone.
But there you go. I mean, they have stuff like eggnog and whatnot.
I can't remember if mince pies got mentioned in the list of... Because, like, in the short story, there's just this huge list of all the crap that the case of Christmas present is sat on. And Scrooge meets them. It's just this long list of food. A lot of it meat, actually. Lots of different meat. Not all bird.
This is a look into the psyche of Charles Dickens. He likes food.
He loves his food, apparently. Oh yeah, that's another thing. Gruel. Not actually what we think it is. Dickens' fault.
Ooh.
Dickens' fault entirely. Gruel isn't actually this horrible crap. I mean, you could make it as horrible crap if you want to, but in the short story, it's made a point of the fact that Scrooge is self-medicating with it because he's got a cold.
Okay.
When he's, you know, when he's just before he's going to bed. And the thing is, though, is that gruel is still around today. And this is not product placement, but it's Horlicks and Ovaltine.
Ooh.
They had to change their name because of the negative connotations that...
Of Scrooge.
Not just Scrooge, no, just... Dickens, Oliver Twist is the worst example. Please, sir, can I have some more? He was eating gruel.
Maybe he just had a really bad experience with it at school or something.
But basically, it's really highly...
He put it in all his stories because he hates it.
It's really highly sort of powderized, you know, like cereal type foodstuffs and stuff, yeah. And mixed with like water or milk or whatever, in order to create something that's a little bit nutritious. And actually, it's staple food of peasants. For centuries prior to Dickens kind of going, I hate the shit in all his, you know, novels whenever he encounters it, basically. Except for, you know, obviously the representation of Scrooge with it, because it's like this is turning into a discussion of food in a Dickens Christmas. Just realised that. Oh, but that was nothing, because everyone really seems to be having... their Christmas meals in the evening.
Yeah. Mm.
Which makes a lot of sense. Even though, I mean, we talked about, even though there's not much representation of religion in the story or the films, it makes sense that people would be having it in the evenings because you'd be going to church.
Bob and Tim have been to church when they turn up.
But that would have been an evening service.
That's true.
Because obviously, all the women need to go to the morning service. It's a bit hard to cook a goose and do all that when you got church in the morning. So it kind of makes more sense that people perhaps have that meal in the evening, traditionally. Of course, I know plenty of people now that do have it at lunchtime and do go to church, but you know they're not cooking on like small open fires in their houses. So it's a bit easier, really.
Still haven't got quite to the point of Back to the Future, where you kind of stick in this like tiny, tiny pizza.
A rehydration machine.
Yes, and then you basically stick it in. 2 seconds, full-blown cooked pizza. That would be sort of fantastic.
Well, for Christmas dinner, you'd just put a very small chicken in and press the button, and out like comes a giant cooked turkey.
Yeah.
But just to get back to what I was trying to say, Dickens made Christmas a lot of what it is today. His fault.
You like Christmas, don't you? Blame Dickens.
Combined with, however, the American fascination for his work.
Ah.
Because he went for a lot of book tours in America. Obviously, he was great friends with Mark Twain. This was in between his books being certain pirated. In the early days, you would get proper sales of them over in America. Piracy was an issue in the 1800s and the 1700s. I know. You wouldn't think it was.
Piracy is a crime. Do not accept it. If you see this cover, it's wrong.
And of course, because the Americans were so fascinated with Dickens, if you consider the fact that most of the adaptations of A Christmas Carol. And I've read in a way, two versions of A Christmas Carol this year, because I've read Prayer for Owen Meany this year. I can't remember the author's name. He's a sort of seminal American author of the 20th century. And there's this whole ongoing thing in it about all these different years where this one small community puts on a play version of A Christmas Carol. Mm. And then, you know, they're based in somewhere in like New England or something. So, yeah. The Americans are quite taken with the Christmas Carol, of course, with their dominance for cultural entertainment. This means, in the English-speaking world, this means that we've become quite well acquainted with A. Dickens-style Christmas, as seen through American eyes.
So this is one of those things where we invented it, but it didn't take off over here until it took off in America.
Whoa. It's the reverse Donnie Darko.
Well, it's the same. It's the same thing that happened with. Oh God, what's he called? The Irish saint. What's he called? St. Patrick's Day. We didn't really celebrate that over here, even though it's a British holiday, until America started going nuts over it.
Well, we weren't really going to celebrate it. I mean, the whole idea of celebrating saints is still a bit contentious because of the religious issues involved through different denominations. But anyway, so it's the Americans' fault that Christmas is the way it is. Sorry, guys.
Well, I mean, obviously, with the whole Santa thing, there's Coca-Cola.
They're American too.
Yeah, so
I just don't understand the hate in your voice when you say this. It's like, it's all Dickens' fault that we get the day off and we spend it with our families and we have really nice food.
That's because she really wants to work on Christmas Day.
No, it's the fact that it wasn't something that just kind of...
You just really don't like your family,
happened.
Do you?
Well, apparently we're not having turkey over at somewhere this year. It's my bitter disappointment.
My mum, this is going on record, my mum gave us soup for Christmas a couple of years ago.
Seriously?
It was barely Christmas at all.
Oh, man.
I really hope she's not listening to this. I love you, Mum.
What happened? There's got to be a story behind that.
It was a riot. No, it was fine. we were having a full Christmas dinner the next day, so we didn't have one that day, but we still wanted one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, it's not that I'm bitter. It's just the fact that a lot of the holiday traditions and festivals that we have in this country, especially, were essentially manufactured between the 1800s and the end of the Edwardian period.
Like Father's Day.
I mean, I've got to admit, I've been saying this a couple of times this year, but in true fashion to, you know, basically the ghost of things to come, I kind of want to see new traditions come in, because Christmas feels the same every year for me at the moment.
You know, it doesn't help when pop music seems incapable now of creating new Christmas songs. Sorry, but somebody needs to get on that, because somebody needs to somehow destroy all copies of Cliff Richard Christmas songs. I know it's going to be a complicated task, and that you're going to have to be thorough, and that you may have to nuke things from orbit, but it can be done.
You have to nuke it from orbit.
It's the only way to be sure. This can be our new Christmas tradition. Every year we should ceremonially burn a Cliff Richard CD in the microwave.
No. There's a problem with that type of thing, because you have to actually buy the CD in order to.
It's either burn or it. We go around the country, unfortunately, raiding people's homes for copies of the music, and I hear.
We could dress as Father Christmas, leap down people's chimneys, and raid their CD racks, and then escape on our reindeer.
It won't be highly illegal and get us in trouble.
You see, this is why no one's come up with new Christmas traditions, because it's a terrible idea.
Well, I mean, I think the only
Dickens
new
was
tradition,
much better at this than me.
The only new tradition that I know of is actually Santa Claus in Futurama. That is kind of a new tradition, you know, basically of recent years of Santa Claus being like mentally unhinged. But I mean, do you guys agree? You know, it's it's seemingly the same every year. I know it's, you know, meant to be the time of goodwill and all that.
I think it's just a symptom of getting older, actually. Like, it's... Because it's just incredible and wonderful when you're a kid, even though it is the same every year. In fact, the fact that it's the same every year helps because you know what to expect, and that makes you even more excited. But I think, like, we're at the age now between having been kids and having kids, so it's sort of lost a bit of the fun. But, like, I'm having my first Christmas, second Christmas away from home a bit. Like, I'm not living with my parents anymore. So it's been nice to just sort of decorate the house ourselves and buy presents just for us and things like that. And so that's felt a bit more Christmassy to me.
Meanwhile, I have yet to decide whether or not I will play along with this Santa lie when I have children of my own.
Mm. Oh, for goodness sake.
There's reasons for this. Studies have shown that kids who are made to believe or allowed to believe in Santa for a prolonged period will become horrible consumer sods. And those who kind of have it nipped in the bud from, like, you know, before 10 sort of deal, before maybe even 8 or 9, are less likely to turn into consumer sods.
I mean, the thing is, though, is that, you know, you get kids that finally get told that there's no Santa. And just the devastation they feel.
You don't tell them. You just let them figure it out slowly. I was never explicitly told there isn't one. I just figured it out somewhere around the age of 13 that this didn't make a great deal of sense.
13?
13's late. I was in denial. I'm going to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
Meanwhile, at least Dickinson have for Christmas, you know, in A Christmas Carol.
That would have been...
Well, the Ghost of Christmas Present's a bit Santa-like.
Christmas presents.
Hey!
But that's because he's based not really, I think, on a Christian figure, more of a, I think he might be a slightly pagan figure.
Well, I'm trying to remember where cornucopias actually come from in the first place. Are they a pagan thing? I feel like they are, and I'm totally wrong. I'm going to shut up.
He doesn't seem like exceptionally Christian just due to the whole excessive feasting thing he seems to have going on for him. But anyway, I'm gonna move us. I think we need to ask ourselves at this point which of the films we preferred.
Me, I would say mostly because I've seen it the most times and because it does. Yeah, I would say Scrooged with Bill Murray. That's my favourite one.
I'm going to say Muppet's Christmas Carol, probably for the same reason that I've seen it so many times. But yeah, I just love it. I think it's great. It's just so happy and bouncy and Christmassy. And also touching, even though they cut the really sad song out of it for no reason.
I mean, just to make everything clear, out of those three, I would say Scrooge. But I do want more original stuff coming out.
Stop making these.
I prefer...
Well, it definitely wasn't the Zemeckis version,
No,
was it?
I really did not like the Zemeckis one.
We need to have a bit of a tirade about that
Will,
one,
Will
I think.
Will and Maimon. I think I preferred The Muppet Christmas Carol because I like the catchy tunes.
I could never handle singing
in Marley's Amazing. Tiny Tim as a frog is convincing. Tiny Tim, I saw.
It's quite interesting. I think like on Facebook, I come across one of these posts, and it's like, you know, during when you're a kid, you kind of absolutely hate the musicals in Disney films. Like when you come to teenagehood and like adulthood and whatnot, you're just singing along with them and. I think
loved them.
I hated them.
Cynical child with no heart.
I still hate most Disney musicals. Just in the
then
case
you
of
are
the Christmas.
Still a cynical child
I'm
with no
still,
heart.
I've always had a soft spot for Muppets.
That's why you're marrying me.
Hey!
I'm not saying anything about that. okay, so we need to talk about the Zemeckis one. Because we want to talk about what it was like, what we thought of them trying to make the story more cinematic. Because obviously changes had to be made to the story in order to make it work.
Can I just ask, because obviously they did it in CG. Yeah. Was that necessary?
Well, Zemeckis went through this weird phase of his career where he decided he was going to be the one to pioneer motion capture, which is the Gollum style prancing around with ping pong balls stuck to a leotard. and that then computers take that and put that movement onto CG characters. And he made, weirdly, he made three very snowy films. He made Polar Express, which I think did really well. My family watched that every Christmas. I think it's creepy as hell, but they seem to think it's very Christmassy. I really find it
odd. I haven't actually seen it all the way through ever.
I've not seen it at all.
Then he made Beowulf, which was trying to appeal to a more mature audience. And it sort of works and it sort of doesn't. And then, because that one didn't do very well, I get the impression the studios went, you need to make another Christmas family film like Polar Express that'll make loads of money, like what Polar Express did. He's got out of that now. Flight, which came out this year, I think, was his the first film he's done in live action for quite a while. By all accounts, it's really good.
We saw it.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of it.
But anyway, continue your thing.
But so that's why it's CGI, because he was trying to show what this medium could do at a time when no one else was. Since then, Avatar happened, and everyone is suddenly a lot more accepting of motion capture because Avatar made all the money. So, with that done, and then, of course, Spielberg made Tintin, and that's a lot better than any of the Zemeckis ones.
To be honest, that's going kind of very, very mainstream Hollywood, because obviously Final Fantasy, Spirits Within and whatnot were, you know, basically they were the real pioneers, because they're the ones that actually did the final flight of the Osiris as well, from the Animatrix. And that was going for, you know, kind of more...
There were several things that really bothered me about the Zemeckis film.
Uncanny Snowy Valley.
Yeah.
We've not really actually said this. We should say that the Zemeckis one just randomly goes into action scenes for no reason all the damn time.
It's like, we won't take bits from the short story that we could have done, but we'll put a random action sequence in that actually makes no real sense.
Well, he flies in the sky on a rocket for no reason. And then he's chased by giant shadow horses and shrunk.
Slowly shrunk down to a tiny thing and then gets smashed up with a fire poker.
Yeah.
Maybe that wasn't snow. That was a mechanism of snow.
I don't know if you felt this, but to me it felt like Zemeckis was trying to make a very faithful adaptation, because it's got more of the genuine dialogue in it and more of the story beats in it than either of the other versions. It's actually closest to the source material in some ways.
Which is scary.
Yeah, but it felt like he was trying to do a serious, genuine take on it, and someone was looking over his shoulder going, we need to keep people interested, put in more action scenes.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Throw things at the camera, because 3D and things like that.
It was weird, with Scrooge's design compared to everyone else. Like, they'd gone out of their way with this whole physicality thing. And it's really dubious enough when you talk about Dickens writing about characters that are really miserly.
Yeah,
and are involved in money, because there has always been the old accusations that some of the Dickens stuff is anti-Semitic, and you look at the design of Scrooge, and it's just kind of in like the Zemeckis film. And
how old is he meant to be in the story? Does it say
he's meant to be?
He's meant to be very, because that's the first version where you got the impression that the Ghost of Christmas Future was showing him next Christmas. It felt very much like, this is you in a year's time, dead. Where other versions, it's like, this is you 10 years from now, dead. It felt
I don't think it necessarily says, but I mean, it says when he's born, I think, in one thing, maybe in the story, and obviously when stuff's set at one point. So, because he was born, I think, 1786?
Okay.
The character. So, what was it, 1850s the story is set?
Presumably 170 years ago.
1850s or 1840s or something. So he's quite old.
Yeah.
For that point. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, with a name like Zemeckis, you can't be sure, unfortunately, whether or not he has a Jewish, you know, family ancestry going on. He might. But yeah, it's just the character design. It's just for it's a moneylender, and it doesn't say in the book that he's got exaggerated features, like a weird nose and chin kind of going on. But the Zemeckis character design for Scrooge is just a bit, it was a bit on the iffy side.
Now that you've put it like that, yeah.
I was just like, okay, because I'd watched it before until we watched it for this.
Well, I mean, it's possible that, you know, it's just basically described as grotesque features.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if they're trying to bring around a physicality for what was happening within him.
Mm. To make him physically look ugly.
Another aspect of motion capture is that you're sort of locked into similar facial features to the person you're showing. Mm. So
I did notice that it was almost like they'd stuck a big nose and a big chin.
Well, that's the thing.
Jim Carrey.
You can alter the shape of the face in the places the face doesn't move, very much like real prosthetics. So your options are nose, forehead, cheeks, chin, ears. Mm. So they gave him a massive chin and a massive nose because those are things that are not affected by his facial movements that they are recording and need for the performance. So it could just be a terrible coincidence.
But the main thing that really bugged me about Scrooge had nothing to do with the shape of him. It had all to do with the texture of him. What the bloody hell was going on with his hands? The texture effects, like, they just about got the texture effects for the skin on his face just about right. His hair was kind of, like, a bit not quite there.
Yeah.
And then you see close-ups of his hands, and it didn't look like it was from the same character because it was a completely different texture to his face. And the texture on his face looked far more naturalistic, whereas the texture they'd used on his hands for the close-ups, it was just kind of like it was plastered on, like it wasn't skin in the universe that had been created. It was just some weird cover over some shapes. And every time I saw his hand, I found it really off-putting. I suppose it was a degree of uncanny valley, would it be, with that? Mm-hmm. And I found it really off-putting whenever they had close-ups of it. And they did a lot of them. They did a lot of them, though, because they are, like, emphasising the boniness of his hands. But then whenever I saw his hands, because his face was usually in shot as well, and it was just like, it doesn't look right. It doesn't look like it's part of the same person. It really, really bugged me.
To be fair, it is all about the detail. I mean, a couple of bits where the camera was actually zoomed out a bit. So you had, you know, kind of a long shot. And some of the characters looked like they could have been real. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's all about detail.
I'm going to move us on to one of our last bits of discussion for tonight, and we need to ask and try to answer the question of why haven't there been any mainstream adaptations which have Scrooge replaced with a female version?
Before that, can I just ask?
Yeah.
Who is the Scroogiest of the Scrooges?
Who is the Scroogiest of them all?
Yeah.
The Zemeckis Scrooge.
I actually agree. Yeah. Although I really like Michael Caine. He's really, really good.
He has
Muppets.
A slight warmth to him, which you don't get with a CG Scrooge or Bill Murray.
That's true.
Well, Bill Murray, you get a tiny bit, but he's at least passionate about his own life.
Yeah, and he's friendly to those bums on the street as well.
That's after the
intervention.
Yeah, it's after the first ghost.
Yeah, which is actually quite an interesting point because
he's meant to start changing as soon as after the first ghost. He starts changing.
Yeah, because actually the past has more effect on him than anything else, doesn't it?
But I mean, the thing with Scrooged is that it felt like the visits were actually further apart than on the rest of them because they kind of blended into each other with the rest of them. Whereas Scrooged, it was like he got returned each time to kind of real life.
Anyway, why haven't there been any mainstream adaptations of Lady Scrooge? There are TV movie versions where Scrooge is a woman.
Scrooge looks like a lady.
These are all like modern set now versions?
Well, I say set now, these are things from like the 80s and 90s.
Okay, but like not period pieces.
No, they've just been set in the present. You couldn't really do it set in the past.
You wouldn't have that kind of.
The only way you could do it is if the woman was in an illicit profession.
Hmm.
So she would have to be either somehow she was a money lender, but she was a loan shark, or she ran a brothel. That'd be about the only way you could probably have
an old version of Scrooge.
that version would be interesting.
But at the same time, you would give plenty of similar sort of situation of dealing with people's weakness and needs and being taken advantage of at the same time, but set in a historical kind of situation. That is pretty much the only way you could probably do it. You can obviously it's like with Scrooge that you could easily do one that's set in the present.
Yeah, easily. Mm.
But the problem with doing that is that you don't want to make it. Because it's really patronising when women are represented if they have gone for careers. And they haven't had children. Oh my God, the less of a woman. All that bloody crap. It's actually really fucking patronising. I'm sorry. It's something that actually deeply offends me when women are represented that way. Like, they haven't had a fulfilling life if they haven't had kids.
Mm.
And men don't have that. And it's just kind of like, if you were going to do if you were going to make an adaptation of A Christmas Carol with a woman as Scrooge, you would. It's just cliche whenever you do that, and it's just offensive to the whole thing. It would be more of a case of you should actually make a point of, you know, they have been tight-fisted and unfair with friends, family, and employees and their fellow person.
One thing that I will say is that with at least most of my interpretations of Scrooge is that he's basically somebody who's lost something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that's come up. It's kind of inferred, but it's never said explicitly, that his nephew may have been the reason for his sister dying in childbirth.
Right.
But it's never explicitly said. Because
is his sister a slightly bigger part in the? Because she appears for a couple of seconds in the.
She's
Zemeckis
obviously
running.
There's the scene of her taking him away from school.
Yeah.
And she gets mentioned again, and then she's not. She's but it's never said that her death was caused by the birth of his nephew.
Can we? So I know we're not just finished yet, but can we actually slightly ramp up the mood because it's getting depressing?
Happy Christmas, listeners.
It just annoys me that
we need to cut our miserable song out.
it just does annoy me that there hasn't been a mainstream adaptation with a woman's lead.
Is this simply a literature thing, like it's a great work of literature, so we don't like messing with it that much, in the same way that Shakespeare characters tend not to be gender bent.
Because the fact of the matter is, obviously, you've got the Bill Murray Scrooge that we've been talking about, and the fact that there are TV movie versions. And certainly from the American production point of view, it's always struck me that TV movies tend to be aimed at women anyway. It's like, rather than getting a film that isn't, because like you'll get. Obviously, you get romantic comedies will make it into mainstream cinemas and shit, like nobody's business. But dramas that are female focused rarely do. So it's kind of like, well, you know, that's the thing, is it's seen as it's not something that would be done for them, but oh, we'll do it as a TV movie. Mm. It's like, well, you could give cinematic release, you know. It's purely market. Bullcrap.
Yeah.
Like, it is the whole, you know, it won't sell well, in theory, our marketers say. It won't. Pretty much.
At this point, although I would say the reason there aren't any now is because there's a billion versions of this already.
Oh, yeah.
There are too many versions. I don't even know if the Zemeckis one is necessarily the most recent. Full on cinema film version. So there's so many that there's not any but real push then, to make more of them.
But then the majority of them are a traditional retelling of the story set in the story's actual pan, you know, where the story was set.
Which,
it's the adaptations like Scrooged, which are few and far between. And I think that's where you'd have to go. Is you know, it's like when people take obviously the, you know, obviously the themes of stuff from Shakespeare, like the Romeo and Juliet type of situation, or 10 Things I Hate About You, like The Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah.
You know, it's doing that kind of thing with it rather than necessarily calling it A Christmas Carol.
Anyway, can we please end on a happy note?
I've been trying to find a place to drop this in. It just hasn't happened, so I'm going to do it now because I think it's quite fun. You know how in the Muppets version there are two Marleys?
Yes.
They were the Marley brothers. Did you catch the name of the other brother?
No.
Because there's Jacob Marley and there is Robert Marley, which condenses down to...
Bob Marley.
Bob Marley! That makes me so happy. I just love that. I think that's great.
And the other thing, obviously, about the Muppets Christmas Carol one, above all the others, is obviously you already had a preset range of characters working within another fictional world. Mm. And it does feel like they did obviously choose the right characters for the right roles.
Mm. Weirdly, it's probably the first Muppet thing I ever saw, so it was a while before I discovered that Gonzo was actually like this insane... bedraggled lunatic with explosives most of the time. I thought he was the straight man. So that came as a shock.
And Rizzo being his partner in crime as well.
Is that the first time they teamed up?
I'm not sure, because it's ages since I watched like the original films that they did in the 80s. And like, you know, we haven't got the Muppets Tonight anymore.
No.
But
I have to say, there's nothing sadder than seeing Miss Piggy cry, because she's just such a battle axe and such a loud, happy character the whole time that when she gets sad, it's really, really distressing.
Mm. You ended on distressing.
Oh God, I did it again.
What's a happy eight? What's a happy eight? Tiny Tim lives.
Hooray! Yay!
People get turkey!
We should probably just sing a song.
No, we're not adding in a song.
Let's all sing a happy song. We're Marley and Marley, our hearts were painted black.
It is just a very, very depressing tale at times.
It is very happy at the end, though, and heartwarming, and... they all have a wonderful, lovely, manufactured Christmas that Emily doesn't like.
I just wanted it to naturally evolve, not have some first contact mishap happen. That's all.
What do you mean by first contact mishap?
This sounds like Prometheus. I wanted humans to evolve, not be spawned from some first contact mishap.
See, that's what happens when you come to Earth and you get horny and
when a face hugger and a big albino dude love each other very much.
So like burst out of the chest.
that was the weirdest Christmas discussion ever.
Well, that's all we've got time for this extra special Nerd Assemble extra rule Christmassiness. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodbye, good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have Twitter. It is nice. It's Paul Blewett.
It's good night from me. That's Matthew Heard, the Ghost of Christmas Present. Nerd Tech UK on Twitter, and I have a film blog at nerdtechuk.blogspot.com.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also check out Drowning Multimedia at PWK sometime. You can find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. It's available on iTunes. You can find us over on Facebook and Google Plus as the Nerdism podcast. We're on Twitter at nerdspodcast. Plus, you know, maybe go check out hexdimension.com. There's lots of cool shit. Promise. Promise. Have a lovely Christmas and New Year.
And Merry Christmas. God bless us, everyone.
I'm going to slap you.